Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. This is Dr. Gary Penn, and I hope this finds you well. So today's podcast, I think, is a really important one because it's part of the underpinnings. It explores part of the underpinnings of your psychology. Who you are as a person, how you understand relationships, how you understand yourself, and how other people treat you. It's such an interesting job to have, the one that I have, because, you know, I sit and people come to see me, and the job of a therapist is to try to, like, we get to see how other people interpret things, how other people take, you know, how they go through their lives and they sit down and they say, Gary, I want to talk to you about what happened to me with my parents today, or my mother, or my father, or my best friend, my boss, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my lover. We see them and they tell us a story, they tell us situations that happen and their reaction to it, and how they understood it. And the people that I see, the people that I work with, are very high-functioning people. Smart, articulate, well-read. I mean, overall, I would say a high, high percentage of the people, this is who they are. Very smart, interesting people. And it isn't that they're not aware, they don't get it, but things happen to them. And then they talk about, okay, I don't, you know, it's so interesting that my husband just screamed at me, or my boss just yelled at me, or someone just ghosted me, all these different things. And what they invariably say, and what most of us, or many of us often say, is, what did I do? What did I do to make my, you know, so that my mother doesn't listen to me when I say I don't want her to tell me that she, you know, is disappointed in me, or not always talk about my brother or how successful he is, or why does my husband, you know, scream at me or cheat on me? Why aren't I enough of a person to do this? Or aren't I good enough? And have you ever been in a situation where someone is really angry with you and says, just screw you, you're such an asshole, or fuck you, I never want to see you again, or someone does something really bad to you, and you say, what did I do? What did I do? And you take ownership of it. It's a very, very common thing that I think most of us do. So what I want to do today is I want to help you understand this dynamic, because it's a very natural, it's a very organic thing that we do. Natural, organic thing that we do in our lives. When someone does something to you, or someone just does something, that you take ownership of it and say that, and think and feel that somehow you are responsible for that. So let's explore that. Okay, let's explore that idea. You may be listening, you know, you who are listening to this podcast right now may be 20 years old, 40 years old, 60 years old. But a lot of you will have the same reaction of, what did I do? I can't believe it. I can't believe that my boss screamed at me or fired me, or this person stabbed me in the back at work to get, I can't believe they did this to me. Well, this goes back, this idea of taking ownership goes back to when we were very, very young. It's a very young position, psychological position, that unless we become aware of it, unless we become psychologically solid with it, that we end up taking ownership of it. It's very critical that you understand this. So when we're young, when we're 3, 4, 5 years old, the world really does revolve around us. We think on a very intuitive level that things happen because of us. We're very solipsistic, very self-referential. So I'll give you an example, okay? You're a little boy or a little girl, let's say 4 or 5 years old, and you are in the kitchen with your mother, and your mother says, "Will you please take this plate of food to the dining room table and put it on the table?" And being the good little boy or girl that you are, so happy to be helping mom, you take the plate and you walk to the dining room. And what happens is that you trip, and big plate of all the sauce and all this food spills all over the carpet. Your mother rushes into the dining room, screams at you, "What the hell is wrong with you? I can't believe you did that. That is the stupidest thing ever. You are such a bad boy. You are such a bad girl." And she's screaming at you like a lunatic. Now, when you're 5 years old, how do you understand this as a little boy or a little girl? Well, you understand this in the way of, mom is yelling at me because I am a bad boy. I did something bad. I spilled the plate of food. And the reason why she's screaming at me is not because she had a really crappy childhood. It's not because her father molested her or her mother hit her or she was neglected or her husband hasn't paid attention to her for years and she's angry and lonely and miserable and lost in her life. No. Mom is screaming at me. Mom is yelling at me because I am a bad boy. I am too young to see the lay of the land. I am too self-referential to think for a minute that maybe this is my mom who's being a lunatic and is unhappy and depressed or hateful or so violently angry at the way her life turned out. I feel responsible. I take the ownership of this. That is what this is about. Now, as a little boy or a little girl, if I take ownership of it, right? If I take ownership of it, it helps me in a lot of ways. It gives me control of the situation. Mom, you know, as much as she's mean to me and I hate the fact that she's screaming at me, I still love her. I still need her to take care of me. I still need her to protect me. So what happens is mom's not yelling at me because she's a hateful, emotionally labile person who's just, you know, screaming at me because she's a screamer. No, mom is screaming at me just because I'm a bad boy, which instantly rehabilitates her. It's not her fault. It's my fault. So why mother is screaming at me is because I am bad, not because she is mean, not because she is not safe, because I need at 5 years old my mother to be safe. You need your mother or father to be safe, right? If you grew up in a home where there was divorce, dad moved away, let's say, the other side of the country or a couple hours away, doesn't come around much anymore. What do you think? What do you feel? For those of you who had that happen to you, what do you think? What do you feel about that? Well, you probably feel, even though you know intellectually, nothing to do with you, but you probably feel that if I was a better boy, Dad would not have left me. Dad would not have gone away. If I was not so bad, and even though we may feel this, I mean, even though we may know as adults, like, well, I was, you know, 7 years old when my parents split up, and what could I have done? I was just a good little kid. That this is my father's issue or my mother's issue, we will still feel that something is wrong with us. When I work with people who were adopted at birth, on some cellular level, there's a feeling very often, not always, but very often, like, I am defective. Something is wrong with me, that my biological parent did not want me. If I was somehow better, not this person, that my mother or father would not have given me up. It's very powerful. It's a very powerful way of understanding ourselves, of understanding who we are and why things happen the way they do. So we are trying to figure this out. We're trying to figure this out in ourselves. And so what happens is when you're 30 years old, when you're 40 years old, and or I, you know, something that happens and someone yells, screams at me, right? And or screams at you and you say, what did I do? What did I do? Why are you doing this to me? Why did you do this? Now, let me tell you that when you ask someone why they do something, I will tell you that if you ask someone why they do something or why they don't do something, they will always give you a reason. Right? If you ask me why I beat my wife, I will say to you, well, I beat her because she burns my steak. I've told her a million times to not talk on the phone when she's cooking. And yet she, you know, there she is again, and my steak's overcooked. And so I pound her, and maybe she'll learn a lesson. So the point is, of this stupid story, is that if you ask someone why they do something or why they don't do something, they will always give you a reason. Why did you do that? We see this all the time in abusive relationships where a man hits a woman. It could be a woman hitting a man or a man hitting a man, but let's just stick with the stereotypical thing. A man hits a woman and the woman says, what did I do? And, well, you smiled at the waiter. You burned my steak again. Something. So he hits her, and if she doesn't leave but she stays, then at some level she says to herself, well, I shouldn't have burned a steak. He did tell me. And she takes ownership and responsibility, excuse me, for that. And the abusive person, on some level, if she stays long enough, will feel that on some level she deserves it. Very sick. Very young. It's a very young feeling. It's not that we can't be wrong. I could be wrong. I could do something wrong, but if someone screams at me doing something wrong, if I show up late for dinner, we're having dinner, and I show up 15 minutes late, and you say to me, you're such a piece of crap. What the hell is wrong with you? You're lucky to even that I'm even having dinner with you. Why can't you get your act together? You're such a loser. Someone talks to me that way. Now, I may be late. I may be 15 minutes late. But me being late has no connection with you berating me, screaming at me, putting me down. They're not connected at all. What I'm saying to you is, you can be a flawed person. You can burn your husband's steak or your boyfriend's steak. You could come late to something that happens. You could forget to DVR something. You can do a lot of things. You could be texting an ex-girlfriend or ex-boyfriend. But that is not connected to what the other person does. Right? If I'm late or I do something and you start putting me down, I'm not going to say, why, what did I do to make you scream at me? I think the way we need to understand it is to get to the place where we can say, you are really angry with me. You really want to hurt my feelings. You really want me to know that you are very upset. But you can tell me that you're upset. But I will tell you this, it is unacceptable for you to verbally abuse me. So by doing that, by getting to that place where we can say to ourselves, I could be a flawed man or I could be a flawed woman, but I'm not going to take ownership of the other person's behavior. That is very powerful. That is very, very, very powerful. It allows you to be the flawed person that you are to the degree that you're flawed. But it doesn't excuse when other people treat you poorly. I had a couple that came to see me a while ago. The man had an affair. Now, I don't know if I always do anything, but if someone comes to me and someone had an affair, or whether the husband had an affair, the wife had an affair, I usually think of it as it's a two-party situation. Even if one person's a bad actor, the other person's involved in that. They stay with this person. They pick this person. So there's a lot of moving parts here. But just to highlight this idea, the man had an affair, and they were in session. It was the first session. And the man started in on why he had an affair, of all these things that were wrong with his wife, that she didn't do right, and that she was this or she was that. And they may have been true. I mean, she may have been emasculating, or she let herself go, she gained some weight, she wasn't interested in hearing about his day, or whatever it was. She was too interested in the kids. All these things may have been true. And that may have been a responsibility that she had to the marriage and to everything else and to their relationship. But when he started in, and he started in with this litany of problems, which I think needed to be understood, but this is why he was saying he cheated, I stopped him. I said, listen, the reason why you cheated is that you're a cheater. That's it. No other reason. The reason why you cheated is because you're a cheater. And cheaters cheat. We could understand that as in a lot of different ways. Right? Fear of intimacy. Misogyny in this case, perhaps. Power. Inability to express rage. objectification of women. I mean, you could go on and look at this. But what she did or didn't do had nothing to do with him cheating. Meaning that she could have been an awful wife or just not a good wife to him or a problem woman. But you could handle that many, many different ways. He could have said to his wife, "I'm unhappy in our marriage. I'm thinking of other women. I'm having fantasies. I'm trying to get other women. I find that I'm really happy when women smile at me or are talking to me or paying attention to me. We need to talk about our relationship." So he could have done that. Right? Dead, he didn't do any of that. He may have complained a little bit about this and that, but instead of talking about it, acting into their relationship, he acted out and he cheated. Had an affair. Does it exonerate the wife? No. No. She may have been castrating towards her husband. She may have been totally sexually turned off. She may have had no interest in sex at all. Or she may have been, really interested and very available, but she picked a man. So she had her responsibilities to this. But she's 100% responsible for what she does or didn't, what she does or what she didn't do or doesn't do. And he's 100% responsible for what he does and he doesn't do. Otherwise, she'd say, "What did I do to make you cheat on me?" Of course, if she would have asked, he would have told her gladly. But really is, if she said, "Listen, I may not have been a great wife," or maybe she was a great wife. But me, whatever the flaws you see, the fact I was too busy, the fact I was this, the fact that I wasn't paid attention, is not connected to you stepping out on our marriage. You stepped out on our marriage because you're a cheater. And he could say, "Well, I did it because," no, all these things may be true, but you did not need to cheat. Because if someone doesn't acknowledge that, then what they're saying is, given the same circumstances, I will do this again. The man who beats his wife will give you reasons as to why he beats his wife or hits his child. Right? Would you ever hit your child? Would you ever slap your child across the face? I don't know. Would you? What if your 10-year-old said to you, "You're a fucking cunt, I hate your guts"? Would you slap your kid across the face? What if your kid took a big marker and put it all over the white couch or took crayons all over the wall? Would you slap your kid across the face? What if your kid, you asked your kid to make the room 5 times to clean up his room or clean up her room, and you've told him 5 times you walked in there, "Listen, you got to do this." Doesn't do it, doesn't do it, doesn't do it. And finally, you just haul off and hit him or hit her. Now, you may say, "Well, listen, I gave him warning. Told him, I told her." No. No. You know, and I know, of course, that's insane, right? You just don't hit your child, do you? You just don't sit there and haul off and slap your kid across the face. Kid could say something horrible to you. There's a lot of other reactions, like, "Damn, my kid is talking to me this way, talking to my wife this way. This is a troubled child. I need to talk about this with somebody. I need to get my kid into treatment. We need to understand why my child's so angry, why he or she is acting out. But if you have it in your sense of who you are as a person, that it's okay for you to slap your kid across the face, given the right circumstances. That it's okay for you to have an affair, given the right circumstances. Then you're outsourcing who you are to situations, to people. And if you're on the receiving end, then you'll say, well, I guess I understand why he cheated or why he hit me or why she did this or why she did that. Instead of saying, I may be a flawed person, but I am not taking responsibility. If your mother is always critical of you and you're constantly, you know, saying, why can't you just see the good in me? Or why are you doing this? And she says, well, listen, I'm only doing this because I love you. If you're having dinner with someone and they're putting you down, and you're saying to yourself, I don't understand. I try the best I can. Why is she constantly criticizing me? You know, it's scary to take ownership of who you are. Patience, right? If I go over to my mother's house and she's always putting me down, or if I go over my parents' house and they're drunk for the holidays, for Passover or Easter. I had a patient who said, you know, I want to go to see my parents for the holidays. They lived out of state, but they're always drunk when I go to see them and I hate it. I said to her, listen, you can tell your parents, I'm happy to come and see you. I miss you and I love you. But if you're going to drink when I'm there, I'm going to leave. I'm not going to come. Now, the parents may say, well, we want to drink and we are going to drink. Now, instead of saying, well, if they loved me more, if I was a better person, instead of that, if she said, well, which she eventually did, if that's the case, then I'm going to go to Hawaii for Christmas. I'm not coming home. Have a nice holiday. And the problem with that is that she wanted to be with her family on Christmas, but she was complaining about it for years. If you love me, she's thinking, well, you would stop this. You know how much I hate it. Why can't you do this for me? What's wrong with me that my parents can't have to be drunk in order for, you know, them to have Christmas with me? All these things that we do. So by working in therapy and becoming emotionally and psychologically strong, she put a line in the sand. She goes, okay, the win for her, the win in quotation, is that she was not with her family, not what she wanted. And she said, okay, have a nice Christmas. Three Christmases alone. 3 years not seeing her family. Not going there. Talking on the phone during the day. Kept on saying, I'd love to come down and visit. I'd love you to have come up here, but I'm not going to do this when you guys are getting drunk. Before her parents said, okay, fine, we won't do it. That's how we take control of our lives. That's how we do it. If you go out to dinner with someone and your mother always criticizes you, or your husband always criticizes you or puts you down, or you're, you know, I'll give you an example, okay? I'm being a little tangential, but let me give you an example. So let's say I'm a single guy, or we could say a single girl, but since I'm talking, I'll just do it from a male perspective for right now. I'm out on a date. It's my fourth date. I like this girl, right? I like her. We're at a restaurant, and we're sitting down, and we kind of have a couple cocktails. We order an appetizer, and I notice that this girl that I'm seeing is really looking at this guy really hard who's sitting at the bar, a good-looking guy at the bar. In fact, there's a mirror behind her, and I could see his reaction to her, and I could see him flirting with her, and she keeps on flirting with him. And so this is going on. And it's not just a glance. Like, you know, I understand that people look at someone who's very attractive to them. I can understand that. But this is prolonged flirting. Okay? Now, what do you do with that? If that's you, who is in this situation, and the person you're with is doing what I'm saying, flirting. Well, a lot of times people would say, really? Really? Why are you looking at that guy? Why are you doing it? We'll ask again, why are you doing this? What's going on here? I'm right here, eyes forward, right? So we'll make this thing where we'll say, you know, I don't get it. What's going on? I thought we were getting along just fine. And there's a chance she might say, oh, I thought I knew this guy, or he was just looking at me. I was feeling very uncomfortable. I was trying to see what he wanted, or, you know, why are you so insecure? I wasn't doing anything. And then you start to say to yourself, maybe, well, why am I so insecure? What's wrong with me? She didn't do anything. She was just looking at him, you know, for the last 10 minutes. Right? So that could be going on over and over again, right? Over and over and over again. You take ownership, take responsibility. But if I was in that situation, I wouldn't ask her why she was doing what she was doing. What I would do is I would look at her and I would say, listen, the date's over. I'd ask the waiter for the check. And I'd say, I'm going to be leaving. And I could say, I could take you home. I would say to her, I could take you home. I can give you some money for an Uber. Or you can go home with him. But I'm done. We're done. And it would be over. And if she said, I didn't do anything, why are you so sensitive? Why are you so insecure? And I would say, I'm as insecure as I am. But whatever insecurities that I have, that I may have nothing to do, have zero to do with, with what you're doing with this guy. Zero. That is, it's much different. It's much, much different. It's a very powerful position. Because when someone says to you, why are you so insecure? It really hits to like, oh, it's me. If I was more secure and the person I was with was flirting with some guy or some girl, that I'd be able to handle that better. Well, I could handle it just fine. I could say, I don't want to be with someone who's flirting with someone else when we're out to dinner. I just don't want that. But if I take ownership and say maybe something's wrong with me, then it's understood that in this relationship, this person gets to flirt and gets to do whatever they want to do. And then you know what happens as we go forward. You could just see it. It allows you to take ownership of your life. Allows you to take ownership of who you are as a person. So it's a very powerful thing to do. If someone yells at you, if someone stands you up, and if they give you a reason, you simply say, listen, I'm not saying that what you're saying is not true, but they're not connected. You standing me up is not connected to the fact that I didn't call you for 2 days after our last date. They're not connected. You could have said to me, I'm upset that you didn't call me. Or that you thought I was not interested. So when you could separate, as an adult, what other people do or don't do, and not take responsibility automatically and not take ownership, it's a very powerful thing. It's a very powerful thing for you. And it allows you to rearrange your relationships in a way where you start to feel less tortured by them, less injured by them. The fact that your father never calls you is because your father has intimacy issues. Or your father is just has a closed off heart. Or is just low functioning. If you seem to be a good person and you reach out to him and say, I'd love to have a better relationship, and he doesn't reach out to you, and you say, gee, Dad, I'm so sad that you're so limited. I'm so sad that you can't find it in your heart to be open and close to me. Now, there's major implications for this, I know. Because then we have to grieve the fantasy of having the father or the mother or the husband or wife or friend that we've always wanted, because we say, this isn't about me. I'm not asking my father to come over and build a house for me. I'm saying, hey, son, let's go grab some dinner. Let's go to the Dodger game. Let's meet for, you know, coffee and talk. Once in a while, once a month, right? Most of us don't have super high expectations. You want a boss, supervisor that empowers you. That if when you fail, instead of humiliating you, putting you down, being expert at pointing it out, is better able to say, aha, I could see why you were thinking that. Tell me what your process was. Let's unpack it. Let's learn from these mistakes. I want you to grow and learn and feel better about yourself instead of tearing you apart. It doesn't mean that you're the perfect employee all the time, but if I'm your supervisor, I want to empower you. I want you to learn. If I need to show you how brilliant I am by putting you down, that's a Gary issue. It's not a you issue. You look at management and motivation and what to do with people, this is the key. This is an integral part of life in general. People, business, relationships, right? On a macro basis, right? Why did we invade Iraq? Why? Nothing to do with Saddam Hussein. Nothing to do with 9/11. Right? When you really understand that, when you really get it, when you say, we did it because a lot of things going on in Debbie's brain. A lot of things going on in the ideas of the neocons who wanted to have a way of thinking about the world. That's why they did it. Now, that may be a fine reason, but it's not because of Saddam Hussein. Just because someone says something doesn't make it true, does it? Just because you say something doesn't make it true. right? Just because I say it, the reason why I go to the strip club is because they have free chicken wings doesn't make it true. I could use that excuse, but it's a much more damning thing to say, you know, I'm that guy that goes to the strip club three nights a week. I'm that person. Better to say, well, I only go for the free chicken wings. Better to say that. Plays out better. All right. I promise you, I could talk so much more about this because it's so fascinating to me. And when you see it, and when you get on the other side of this, and when you understand that, I promise you, it will be an awakening to your psychology, to your life, and to relationships that will take you to places that I think maybe you've never been before. So I do thank you for listening. Please share my podcast with others because I want my podcast to match my narcissism, which the listenership to match my narcissism, and where I'm a little bit behind right now. So if you like it, pass it on. I wish you all the best. Until next time, this is Dr. Gary Penn. Be well.